Welcome to Equestrian Movement's Best Do No Harm podcast. I'm your host, Katie Boniface, co-founder of Equestrian Movement with Sarah Gallagher. We work with horse riders who want to build a stronger bond and a deeper connection with their horses. In our first Do No Harm podcast, we discuss with other industry professionals how to work with horses to firstly do no harm and secondly support their mental, emotional and physical well-being throughout the training process, so that we have horses that enjoy learning and ask to be ridden. Each episode, we discuss the different influences our training can have and how we can improve our horses' overall athleticism, soundness of mind and body, and emotional fortitude, while strengthening and deepening our relationship with our horses. Each week, I will endeavour to bring to you a new episode on horse riding, training, handling and husbandry, or an interview with other industry professionals to help you address where and why you might get stuck in creating the beautiful union of dancing souls that is the equestrian sport. Are you ready to kick off today's show? Let's get started. Hey team, Katie here from Equestrian Movement, and today I want to talk about respect. R-E-S-P-E-C-T. I can't even remember the words to that song. Respect is a bit of a dirty word in the horse industry, but it's okay, respect. I still love you. And please don't come with me with your hate. So obviously there's a lot of connotations that come up with the term respect, and everybody has their own opinion about how they interpret the idea. And I think the reason why we've got so lost with the idea of demanding respect from our horses and whether or not we have respect from our horses is that this connotation of respect is to have power over something or submission over something, and that respect means doing as I say because I say so and not questioning me. And that's really not what we're looking at when we're working as a team. When we're looking at a team, the term respect is really trust and confidence in each other to make good choices for each other, to put each other in good situations that are going to be for our benefit and going to help us grow and develop as individuals. Respect, like trust, is built over time and it's earned over time with how you show up for your horse and how your horse learns to anticipate what to expect when they're working with you. And in our holistic horse handling program, we kind of bring this idea together under the interpretation of compassionate leadership, in who do you have to be for your horse to want to follow your lead, to want to take direction from you, to feel unsure and seek you for direction. We're looking for who do we have to be in relationship to our horse that when we give them instruction, they're going to follow that direction and follow that lead. And it's not about an escalation of pressure or force to force them into following the lead. And I think that's where the waters can get muddied and the interpretation of respect gets lost, because we want to be as respectful of our horse as we expect respect from our horse. Part of our compassionate leadership skills is being able to develop a language with our horse where they have permission to say no, and that no is not necessarily a work evasion. It's a description to us of to dig further into maybe they don't understand how to answer us correctly. Maybe they can't do what we've asked them to do. We've maxed out their training for the day mentally or physically, and so they need a break, or they need to finish on a positive note so that we can come back to it another day. It's about being able to hear why our horse might show us resistance and not assume that it's because the horse is being naughty and that it's work evasion. There are a couple of reasons I see for the misinterpretation of respect. One, coming from just a general fear of horses, is that, you know, they are big animals. They can be unpredictable. Sometimes they can be a bit dangerous in what they choose to do. And so this idea of demanding respect from our horses from a place of power over and submission, would assume that you have control of them and who they are via force. And we know that that's not truth. We know that that's not a real thing that can happen. And so what you want to be doing instead is, how can you be somebody that your horse doesn't want to run over the top of, or to be somebody that can communicate with our horses so that they don't have to escalate to biting and nipping when they feel threatened, or they feel unsafe, or they're trying to communicate pain, or they're trying to communicate something that we're not hearing. So there's ways of working with our horse that de-escalates the risk and the dangers associated with being with the horses, but it doesn't come from a place of power over. If we're working from a place of submission and power over, we will inevitably blow past our horses' thresholds, and we will end up in a place where their behavior just seemingly comes out of nowhere because we've not given them permission to communicate that they feel unsafe or they feel uncomfortable or they are in pain until they have no control over themselves or their body anymore. A horse that can't control its emotions can't control its behavior, and if we're going to push the horse past its capacity to regulate itself and its emotions and not give it the tools and the pathways to communicate these things to us, then the only option they have left is those big explosive behaviors. There is a place where our horses are going to spook and startle, and we can't eliminate the startle reflex. Exactly the same as, you know, up until probably quite recently, anytime I went to the toilet at night, I used to have to run from the toilet and dive under the covers of my bed. Or, you know, if you get cut off when you're driving, or somebody's like driving erratically, or something happens and it just like gives you that startle right, there's no way of completely eliminating that startle reflex from the horse. But there is a way of giving the horse permission to communicate that they're feeling stressed and tense, so they're getting closer to that startle response, so it's only going to take one thing to tip them over. And there is a way of supporting and helping regulate their nervous system where they are feeling safer, and so they're further away from threshold, and they don't startle as easily. They're not as tense and on their toes. Another place that we can see that idea of forcing respect come up is, you know, when people get a little bit of ego bruising because, you know, they're around peers or around people that they're trying to prove their worth to, or feeling uncomfortable and insecure in themselves. And so as a result, the horse saying no to them or not doing as they're asking them to comes across as like being out of control of the horse and not being a good horseman or woman. So then as a result, because we have that ego bruising, we tend to try and force the horse into doing what we've asked it to do, rather than being in more of that cooperative teamwork of trying to figure out why they're not doing what we're asking them to do. Quite often, when we are in that mindset of I can make my horse do whatever I want, is quite often the time that they choose not to cooperate because they don't really like us in that place. The horses like us to work with them in a way where we are confident and secure in themselves, because that portrays that confident leadership, without the confidence and security of thinking we can make the horse do whatever we want, which, you know, kind of is a bit dualistic in nature, where you would think that with confidence came the security in yourself to know that you can make your horse do whatever you want. Whereas really that confidence comes from knowing that it doesn't really matter in this moment if the horse listens to me or not. It's about the relationship that we're building in the process. There are for sure certain situations that we can put ourselves and our horses into where we really need them to just listen to us. And I always say to my students is that if you can't get your horse to do what that's very motivating to the horse, like moving away from grass. So like the grass is very motivating for the horse to go to, and they're probably going to put up a bit of a fight when we ask them to leave grass. If you can't confidently move your horse off of something that they really want to be doing, then you don't want to be putting yourself into a dangerous situation where, say, you're on the side of a highway, and you know, if you can't get your horse to do what you've asked it to do, then it's going to be very unsafe to the horse and the people around you. But there is a difference in saying, in this moment, in this situation right now, I need you to listen to me, versus I need you to do whatever I ask you to do because I've asked you to do it and because I say so. And if you don't do what I ask you to do, then you're a naughty horse, and it's just work evasion. So respect isn't built in, you know, just one experience together, but each experience together can either build that level of trust and respect that we have for each other, or it can take away from it. So an example of that is, how often have you said, just one more time? You've got, you know, you're going around on your horse and they're going beautifully, and you're like, oh my God, this feels so good. I just want to do it one more time because it feels amazing. And your horse has given you their best effort on that last time around, and it's that one more time that the wheels come off and everything falls apart. Or, you know, if they've given you a really good effort, and then say, for instance, with jumping, and so then you put the jumps up higher rather than finishing them. Or if you ask them to do something that they're unsure about and they get injured doing it, there's sorts of situations where you've asked them to do something that hasn't had a positive outcome on them, and so then they start to be more wary of taking direction and doing what we've asked them to do because they haven't had positive experiences from it. Another thing could be, you know, if we're floating them and they hurt themselves on the float, then they start to lose trust in us asking them onto the float. What we're trying to do is we're trying to build immensely positive experiences for ourselves and for the horses on top of immensely positive experiences for ourselves and our horses, so that over time that trust and confidence is built, so that then we can do the more challenging tasks together because we understand our horse a lot better. We know what motivates them. We know what lights them up. They have permission to tell us if they feel unsure or uncomfortable. We know how to support them through that if they're feeling uncomfortable. And it really takes time. It really takes a full experience of who our horse is. It doesn't happen in that first meeting. And that's why I'll call, you know, that first year of a new horse is the honeymoon period. It's because the horse is, you know, depending on who's trained it before and what they've learnt and how well they're educated, typically in the first 3 months is the horse is on its best behavior and it's perfectly behaved because it doesn't know what to expect and it's just doing as it's told. And then over time you start to peel back the layers of the onion and get to know them on a deeper level. How do they respond when they're stressed? How do they respond under pressure? What do they do when they feel pressure? What do they need to navigate that pressure? And then you start to see who that horse is underneath the conditioning that they've experienced from the people that have worked with them. So normally, after a year of working with the horse, you'll start to really get to know them and you'll really know, you know, what they're going to do when they're stressed or scared, like what's the worst version of them. And then what you're trying to do is you're trying to light them up and create these positive experiences where you get to see the best version of them. And the bonus of that is that if you are consciously creating these positive experiences where they get to shine their best light, then you're also internally wiring that into their nervous system to be showing the best part of themselves. This is one of my favorite parts of training and working with horses, is that, you know, you have the horse that comes in and it's got all of the grievances about how it's been treated and its experiences and, you know, all of the dysregulation. Typically, you know, they won't be really open to connecting, and they'll be doing things that will be trying to drive you away, like biting at you or nipping at you or just not engaging with you at all. And then over time, you can build that rapport with them and you start to see who they are really shine from inside. Sometimes, you know, the horse is just a shutdown and they're not engaging, and you get to slowly bring that, you know, that little unique sparkle of that horse comes up to the forefront and they get to really embrace and show off who they are. And that's really what I think the key to performance is. It's like, if you're performing flashy movements, it's because it's a self-expression of who you are through movement. The horses experience all of the pressure and stress that we put on ourselves for that performance, and that is how they experience this. And it is why, you know, even though we can get them used to going out to different environments, they can still be different when we go into a show environment, is if we're feeling personally that stress and that pressure to perform and being in front of our peers, then the way that we engage with the horse changes, because we're like, oh, I know that you can do this at home. If I just put more pressure on you to get that response from you, then it's going to be 10 times better when we go out. And really what we need to come back to is finding where that connection is and finding where that dance between us lights us up from inside, and the horse is performing because it's eager to perform and it's enjoying movement and it's enjoying showing itself off. So when we're talking about the kind of respect that we're looking for when it comes to working together as a team, and when we're using compassionate leadership skills, it is something that can't be forced and it has to be earned. You want to think about somebody in your life that you have a lot of respect for, and I can just about guarantee that they haven't gotten that from you because they've bullied you into that respect. It has been earned because of the way that you have witnessed how they behave and how they show up in relationship to you, not only you, but also other people. It's like that idea of, you know, how if you're going on a first date or whatever, how that person treats the waiter or treats and talks about their family is a reflection of who they could potentially be in relationship to you. And so you're not creating this respect with your horse because you can force them to behave. You're developing a mutual respect for each other because of how you engage with each other in relationship to each other. So while this can seem a little bit harder and can feel like it's going to take a little bit longer, in the long run, it actually works to your benefit because, you know, as a trainer, there are circumstances where you don't really get the opportunity to build rapport and relationship with horses this way. And so you can define, you know, what you're doing purely on skills alone, balance, cueing, coordination, building those physical development skills. But inevitably you will come across something hard and challenging for that horse, and who you are in relationship to that horse is how you support them through that experience. So, you know, if they find water hard or water jumps hard or like a particular thing difficult and scary, just smacking them harder does not give them the skills to negotiate that fear and to know how to look after another rider, because that's what we're doing as trainers, is, you know, we're trying to create horses that know how to look after less experienced riders. You can't build the confidence in a horse by forcing submission through fear for them to look after another rider that can't then also use those same tools. When we're working as trainers, we really want to be thinking about, you know, the horse building confidence in the skill that we're asking of them, because there are going to be circumstances where they're going to have to be able to do it when it's the rider's first time doing this particular challenge, or You know, maybe the rider doesn't have the confidence to do it, and the horse has to be the one that takes the lead through in that moment, through that process. So when you are a trainer and you don't necessarily have the rapport, the time to build the relationship and the rapport, it's how you show up in the moment that you can support the horse through the challenge. But when it's your own horse and you see them day in, day out, every day for your whole life, you know, all of those relational grievances just come up. If you're time poor and you're frustrated, that's the day that the horse isn't going to pick its hooves up to, you know, treat their thrush in their hooves. If you're running late, that's the day that the horse won't get on the float to go to the competition. You know, there's always these tests to the quality of relationship and who we are to each other. And that sets the foundation of everything that the horse does with us, and that's where the respect is built and where it comes from. So if you're at the beginning of your riding journey with your horse, keep it in mind that if you're getting frustrated with your lack of progress today or your lack of cooperation today, is that you're really trying to play the long game. And if you're, you know, midway through your experience with your horse and you're finding yourself frustrated, then remember, it's, you know, the process of that whole journey. And what you'll find is that your horse, you know, will become aged, and you'll be ready to get your next horse, and you'll go, oh my goodness, I didn't realize how far I'd come with my horse. I need to go back into my comfy armchair horse that just knows how to work with me. And you'll be starting the process of developing mutual trust and confidence and respect for each other from the beginning again. Thanks for listening, and until next time, happy trails.
If you're loving what you're listening to on the podcast, you might be starting to recognize that trying to control your horse through submission-based training is the worst way to ask your horse to look after you. If you're working with or riding horses, you know how unpredictable and sometimes scary they can be. Unfortunately, most struggling horse riders make the mistake of thinking they can physically control their 400 plus kilo fur babies by moving their feet or spooking them into responding with flags and join up. Without giving your horse a reason to care about you and look after you, you will most likely end up with a horse that is disconnected at best, shut down or explosive at worst, because they can't communicate their needs with you, especially if you are already scared, worried or nervous handling your horse. That's why we've created our new free online training experience, Building a Connection with Your Horse. This is how I've gone about creating safe horses for beginners, no matter the breed or previous handling experiences. If you want to learn the secret sauce behind developing safe horses that care about you and look after you without trauma-triggering training methods, register for our new training today at www.equestrianmovement.com/connection. And I will uncover the three big mistakes you might be making if you're trying to build a relationship with your horse, and how you can start building your horse's trust and confidence in you as a leader worth following.